This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte.
The Lake Area United Way is changing its focus and has in the last year or so from just the previous years where the United Way has basically allocated money to agencies in the region to take care of the issues. They focused in particular starting in last year on what are called working poor families. And we have with us Lisa Daugherty, who's the president and CEO of the Lake Area United Way, to talk about it. Lisa, thank you for joining us in the program today.
Thanks for having me, Chris. I appreciate it.
Take, if you will, some time to tell us a little first here about what, I guess, the definition of working poor families are and what this past year, the 2018 efforts the Lake Area United Way has had to try to find the families and to find the ways to help them the most.
Absolutely. So Chris, United Way actually has an acronym for working poor called ALICE. It stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. So these are folks that are working really hard, sometimes multiple jobs in our community, but for a variety of reasons, probably most common, they're not necessarily in a livable wage that allows them to afford what we consider to be very basic necessities. And when those families are struggling day to day, you know, they're making decisions every day, like, for example, you know, do I put gas in the car so I can get to work, or do I fill this prescription that I need? Do I take my child to the doctor, or do I pay the utility bill? I mean, you know, these families are making these choices every single day. And in Lake County, we've got almost one in four families that fall into that category of ALICE, or as you say, the working poor. Mm-hmm. These are families above and beyond those. We've got about a 15% level of poverty throughout Lake County. So these are families in addition to those in poverty. We went through a pretty intense, you know, we did a lot of due diligence around landing on that subject, but we knew that we needed to go back out and talk to those families. So that's what we spent, you know, the better part of last year doing, was trying to understand those barriers that ALICE families are facing and potentially identify strategies that we can invest in. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to, you know, focus first on what we heard from families.
Right.
And of course, you know, we spoke to community leaders, you know, we spoke to different mayors, organizations that are in the community helping these families, and all of that information supported what we heard from the families. But most importantly, there were six emerging themes that came out of the many conversations that we had with ALICE families. And what we heard is that, you know, number one, because they're ALICE, because they're working, they don't have access to a safety net. So when folks are in poverty, as an example, they have a lot of public assistance that they're eligible for. But as ALICE, or the working poor, they're not eligible for that support. So if they don't have family or their church, as an example, to count on to support them, they are literally on their own, and in some cases more vulnerable than folks that are in poverty and have that safety net. The other thing we heard is that these families don't have access to enough access to food, particularly healthy food. And again, with these families working, they can't just go to a food bank or a food pantry, because a lot of times those pantry hours, you know, aren't necessarily accommodating to working families. You know, they're not open on the weekends or evening hours when working families need to access them. Of course, health care. You would expect health care to be an issue. You know, the cost of that and insurance and a lot of the jobs that they're in, they don't have, you know, good coverage that's affordable. Housing. There's not enough housing stock in Lake County that doesn't require more than 30% of your household income. And when families are spending, you know, too much on housing, it you know, makes them very vulnerable and one crisis away from, you know, losing everything or falling into poverty, being homeless. Mm-hmm. And then the other two areas are ultimately where we landed as a United Way to focus, and that was on families not having enough access to affordable, quality child care so that they can work, and of course, a pathway to better paying jobs. You know, these families that we met, they're smart, they're resilient. What they, you know, juggle and manage in a day is amazing. But they are not networked. They don't know where the job opportunities are. And they might need just a little bit of, skill training to get to the next best opportunity. But they can't step away from their job to go for training, even that's free. Ivy Tech offers a lot of training that is, you know, paid for by the state. But they can't access that because they need to earn their income to pay their bills.
On the subject of child care, in talking with the agencies and other organizations, how much did you all figure on average it probably costs for child care here in Lake County for a mother or for a mother and a husband?
Yeah, broad average is around the $10,000 mark.
Wow.
So, of course, it varies, right? I mean, that's a mortgage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that parents are faced with that decision, because if your child is participating in that affordable, in that quality childcare where there's a good curriculum, those kids are prepared for kindergarten. And when they are prepared, their chances of success throughout their entire education are far better than if they don't have. You know, a lot of kids, families have to rely on, you know, grandma or an aunt or a neighbor. And thank God they have that, that access to even that so they can work. But the reality is grandma doesn't know how to, in most cases, if you have a retired teacher grandma, then you might be very lucky.
Have somebody who's qualified to be able to do the right kind of preschool child care that you need to help get the youngster ready for school.
Yes, but most families are not that fortunate. Mm-hmm. And the kids don't have, you know, that curriculum for those couple of critical years prior to kindergarten to get them ready.
We're talking with Lisa Daugherty, who's the president and CEO of the Lake Area United Way. The United Way has been focusing last year and is continuing going into 2019 to focus in on some of the major issues in Northwest Indiana and Lake County in particular. And we're dealing with family members, I guess the common title, although it's not the official title, I suppose, is the working poor, family members who are working, but they still, even in the job or jobs, multiple jobs they have, still aren't making enough money. Just barely to make ends meet and to try to get ahead to plan for a better future. We talked about child care, and that's one of the focus areas, you say, is what the United Way is going to continue on into 2019. The other is dealing with employment and with something more than just, I guess, a workable wage. What would a workable wage here in Lake County be that's something that you strive for?
So just as an example, because, of course, that wage varies with family size. But if you take a two-parent household with an infant and a young child, that family, in order to afford very basic necessities, needs to make around $52,000 a year. I mean, that is what that household has to bring in order to afford. No luxury items there, just your basics, like a reliable car that gets you to work, a house that doesn't, you know, that's in a safe neighborhood that doesn't, you know, take your entire household income, you know, food on the table for everybody in the family.
And that's the area that's, unfortunately, that's why people have to work more than one job or put things together even or been part of the part-time workforce that we have now these days that don't have a full-time job and can pick up a part-time job to add on to it. They have to put together two or three or even more part-time jobs to get by.
Correct. And, you know, what we've learned in our process is that there are, in fact, many very good jobs in the community, but the families don't necessarily know or they aren't necessarily ready today to step into that job. They might need just a little bit of training. We actually have a jobs work group that meets the first Tuesday. It's comprised of folks representing organizations like Methodist Hospitals, because of course healthcare is a major employer, Horseshoe Casino. There are many jobs that are currently available that pay a decent wage. We've got Ivy Tech at the table because, of course, they provide a lot of training. There's a lot of state, you know, funding that's available for training. But again, families don't know about it. So Work One is also at the table. Goodwill Industries, you know, all of these organizations either have jobs or they offer training that can help families, you know, get to that better paying job. And what Lake Area brings to the table, Lake Area United Way, is that we have a coalition of organizations throughout the county that are serving families. So it will be adding us to the equation with that grassroots effort to get families connected to these opportunities is going to help these families thrive and, of course, you know, ultimately the community.
Now, are any of these organizations already working or starting to work with the Lake Area United Way going into 2019 to help come up with a strong strategy to help these family members that need the help, that need the re-education or additional education to be able to get that good-paying job to get out of the so-called working poor status?
You bet. All those organizations that I mentioned and more have been meeting regularly. We have been bringing in organizations that provide some sort of support or training opportunities to talk about what's available to families. We've had a panel of employers that came in and spoke to this strategy group. We call it a work group. About, you know, what the barriers are for them as an employer and what they see for families. And today, Ivy Tech is taking us through a facilitated process called Simplex, which is a problem-solving tool that's going to help us take everything that we've gathered in the last, you know, 6 months and identify those strategies that, you know, I like to say low-hanging fruit, that Lake Area United Way can invest in 2019.
Now, do you think, besides all of these goals that you're trying to reach here, in particular with this particular problem that the United Way is focusing on, is there anything else you can try and fit into the plan for the rest of or most of 2019?
Well, we know that, we tried to take a focus on root causes. And so, you know, I mentioned those other emerging themes that we heard from families. Mm-hmm. We know that if we focus on helping families access childcare, which is going to help them be employable, that they're going to enter the job force right away, get people connected to education and better paying jobs, that's going to resolve those other issues. They won't need a safety net. They'll be able to afford more of the housing inventory that's in the community. Healthcare is going to come along with those jobs, or at least put them in a position to better afford it. So, the focus on those two issues alone is a big job and is going to require a number of resources. But, you know, we're super excited about the fact that now our campaign, so when we go into an employer now and we talk to the employees about where we're focused, they get it. They relate to it. If they don't have that hurdle themselves, they have somebody in their family or in their circle, you know, community, their church, they understand these barriers. And every time somebody steps up and gives of, you know, their time, talent, you know, or resources, they're going to help more families get access to childcare and jobs. We know this is a longer-term focus for us. We also have grant opportunities now that we can pursue, major grant opportunities that we can bring into the community.
Is this an opportunity for funding that you didn't have before necessarily by just offering up grants to help agencies along the way?
You bet. Nobody wanted to invest any longer in giving United Way money just to simply pass on to other organizations. They started donating to them directly, which, you know, makes sense, that which is why we've, you know, revisited our model, because that role as an impact or as a middleman doesn't have the impact that it used to. So now we are taking a lead in the community as the backbone organization around, you know, this issue. And, it's, you know, some of the funders that have been at the table with us from the beginning, like ArcelorMittal as an example, they've funded our new work in a significant way. They're excited because they don't see other organizations really focused in on these families. And they understand that if we can, you know, create pathways and lift, you know, give these families a hand up, that the entire community is going to benefit.
Well, they probably recognize, too, that maybe there's a possibility that some of these people helped along the way may be future ArcelorMittal employees or employees of any major industry in the region.
You've got it. It's exactly that. And I will tell you that, you know, the families that I've met, I mentioned earlier, they're strong, you know, they're smart, they're resilient, they're hardworking. These are the people that employers want to hire.
Well, Lisa, it's been a busy 2018, and it looks like busy 2019 ahead,
yeah,
to be sure, too. Thank you for talking with us about it.
Thank you, Chris.
Appreciate Lisa Daugherty is the president and CEO of the Lake Area United Way.
Regionally Speaking is supported by Strack and Van Til, because an informed community is a prepared community. Strack and Van Til, providing expanded pre-cut fruits, vegetables, and organic produce. Learn more at strackandvantil.com.
Presidents and politicians, global leaders, and grassroots activists. Democracy Now! Talks with all sides of the story to get the most comprehensive look possible at the changing global landscape. I'm Amy Goodman. Together with Juan Gonzalez, we host the award-winning independent news hour, Democracy Now!, getting the answers to questions you may have or may not have thought of, or maybe you didn't even think they were important at all, but now are intrigued. Tune in every Monday through Thursday at 1 p.m. for Democracy Now! Here on Lakeshore Public Radio and streaming online at lakeshorepublicmedia.org.
It's time once again for Green Fleet Radio, and here's your host, Carl Lissick.
Well, thank you for that introduction, and today our guest is Ms. Kathy Luther. She's the Chief of Staff and Director of Environmental Programs for the Northwestern Indiana Regional Planning Commission, NERPC. Kathy, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Carl.
Well, it's always great to have you on the show, and I know South Shore Clean Cities and NERPC have worked closely together for years, but remind our listeners, what is NERPC and what do you do?
What do I do? So NERPC is the Northwestern Indiana Regional Planning Commission, which is a big mouthful, which is why most people say NERPC.
So I know the NERPC staff, subcommittees, committees, and full commission just completed an intense process that changed the way NERPC approaches funding opportunities. So what was that thought behind that process and behind the change, and how does it fit in NERPC's 2050 plan?
Well, we're working on the 2050 plan now, which is we are required. So one job that we have at NERPC is to allocate federal funds to local governments for transportation. So the federal government requires, if you're in an urbanized area with a lot of population and a lot of communities, that you have to do that in a regional level so that the funds are put to best use. And that's why we have elected officials on our board, so that they do represent people. And so we have typically $20 million a year in road money, mm-hmm. and several additional million in transit money. And the money kind of exists in buckets. Mm-hmm. And so you can only spend it on certain things. And historically, we've spent it as heavily – the highway money anyway, heavily on roads as per local government requests, was local priorities. Mm-hmm. And this time, as we went out to the public for the 2050 plan, we realized that people were very interested, the public and the citizens were very interested in kind of improving their communities in a more broader way than just asphalt and roads. Obviously, roads are very important, and we are still allocating millions of dollars to them. You know, people are interested in sidewalks that, mm-hmm. that work and go places, and they're interested in the quality of place. You know, do their downtowns have benches and lighting, and do they have safe places to ride their bikes, and can their kids walk or bike to school safely. People were very interested in air quality and how buses and vehicles and things influence their communities that way. So based on a lot of public input and also working through with all our different committees, we have an environmental committee, we have a road committee, we have a trail committee, we have a transit committee. We have
a lot of committees.
A lot of committees. I'm not sure how that happened. But anyway, and the committees allow for not just the elected officials, but the engineers and also stakeholders, advocates for different activities or different groups of people to participate actively. And so based on all that information, we scored all the different types of things that the federal money is eligible for. And we ranked them by how well they would adapt the region to the future.
I see.
Not knowing exactly what will come at us in the future, but we know there'll be technology. We know there'll be changes in the economy. Great example of that is online shopping, right?
Sure.
So more people need things delivered and less people are going to stores. So how do we adapt a transportation system to meet that need in the future? That's just an example of how things are different. So that's what the 2050 plan is about. And that is not finished yet. We will still be coming out to the public for input on that as we go forward. But in order to do the transportation part of the plan, we have to have projects selected to invest in.
I see.
That's what we've been doing so far, is ranking what the most important kinds of projects might be and how we might score them so that when communities apply for them, we can choose the projects that are the best for what the region wants.
Okay, so improving our quality of life here in Northwest Indiana. I see. So I know you have elected officials, nonprofit representatives like South Shore Clean Cities, industry leaders, and governmental agencies on the NERPC subcommittees, committees, and commissions. So what did they do to make these changes and meet these goals for the 2050 plan?
Well, we've kind of been, we've actually spent a lot of hours. I know Lori Cagle with your staff, Carl, we spent the environmental committee spent, we figured, 9.5 hours going through all the things that money could be spent on and what impact that would have and how we would decide a project was better for the region than another, just coming up with that. So then just over, actually right before the holiday, NERPC posted the notice of funding availability to our website, which is www.nerpc.org. Now, only local governments, cities and counties and towns, can actually apply for this funding and transit operators. So if you're interested in how your community is going to apply for federal transportation dollars, you know, you could look at our website, see what kind of things are eligible, and maybe communicate with your mayor or your town council.
Sure. And we've seen like public-private partnerships through this kind of funding activity, right? I mean, there's been private-public partnerships that have taken advantage of this money throughout our region.
We've worked on a few. It's been challenging because to do. We're trying to encourage the communities to reach out if they're interested in private partners to do some of the things. Like a great project we've done with the congestion mitigation air quality money has been with the city of Hobart. They applied for funding. Well, they applied for some funding for compressed natural gas garbage trucks. That was, those garbage trucks weren't primarily through our funding, but then through our funding, they were able to build a new fueling station and a new part of a new garage to maintain those vehicles and to put compressed natural gas in them. So your garbage trucks drive around in your neighborhood all the time. They idle. They in the past were idling, you know, dirty diesel emissions. And so now you have, in the city of Hobart, has gone completely committed to clean garbage trucks, which improves the quality of life for all the residents in Hobart.
Sure. I mean, it's been a great project. It's been an example that's really put Northwest Indiana on the map for alternative fuels here, and you know, we're excited about that. So how can our listeners learn more about NERPC and some of these projects that are coming up, Kathy?
Well, so if you go to our website, www.nerpc.org, in the What's New, you'll see, find links to the funding opportunity. Also, a brand new thing, we've been really working hard on transparency, so that's very clear where all the federal money that comes into the region gets spent. We have a new project or a new website called the it's called the RTIP for Region TIP. If you go to or Google RTIP.NIRPC.org, there's a whole online site you can search. You can search by map and click on your community and find where projects are. You can search by county. You can search by community. You can search by transit, by project sponsor, which is the same. And you can find out exactly how much money, federal dollars, any entity in Lake Porter and LaPorte County have received through NERPC.
And that will do it for today's edition of Green Fleet Radio. Thank you again to Kathy Luther, Chief of Staff and Director of Environmental Programs for the Northwestern Indiana Regional Planning Commission. I'm your host, Carl Lissick. Thanks for joining us. And remember, it's never too late to begin your environmental legacy. Thank you.
Green Fleet Radio is made possible by South Shore Clean Cities. Carl was talking with Kathy Luther with NERPC. You can hear Green Fleet Radio on Wednesdays here on Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And the podcasts of Green Fleet Radio are available online at lakeshorepublicradio.org. As well as on NPR One, just search for WLPR. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Of course, with the end of the year coming up, there are a number of financial to-dos that you may want to accomplish by December 31st to be able to avoid any penalties or, at best, any missed opportunities. So you should take some steps today to make things easier for you, even before you have to file your taxes here in April. But some things just can't wait. Well, because you have to have the end of the year done to be sure. Greg Hammer, our financial advisor, with us to talk about it. And Greg, as always, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's start out here first. We talked about this, too, in past conversations, or at least lately, certainly, is about dealing with the decision that you have to make whether you're going to itemize your deductions or take the standard deduction on your 2018 return, which, of course, is going to be the first one under the new tax laws.
Yeah, absolutely, and there's been some significant changes, not only in the amounts. As you know, most people are familiar, if you're single, it went to $12,000 standard deduction. If you're a married couple, it went to $24,000. But for a lot of individuals, there's still going to be people itemizing, and they've changed a lot of the way the itemized deductions work in terms of limiting certain things like capping the state tax and real estate taxes and so forth. So you just need to be familiar with those, specifically around, you know, potential things that you might still be able to take advantage of.
Now, what are going to be the new standard deduction limits here for people that aren't familiar with what the changes are?
So the individual, and again, there's still an additional increase for people 65 and over, but for the individual, it's $12,000 unless they're 65 or over. They will get an additional $1,250. Mm-hmm. And for a joint filing return or a married couple, it is $24,000. And again, if each of them are over the 65 mark, or 65 or older, I should say, then they would get the additional $2,600.
Yeah. Now, I know that we kind of mentioned this last time when we talked about charitable deductions and the like here, too. Is it wise maybe to be able to pay those ahead?
Yeah, so one of the things we're looking at, because the standard deduction is so high, what may have been deductible from an itemized standpoint and create value on the tax return may not at the certain amounts that people are doing. So specifically, one idea to look at is, if you are charitable-minded, look at strategies where you can lump those contributions together. There's strategies where you can get a qualified deduction today, but then go ahead and disperse that particular contribution over the next several years, like donor advisor funds. So instead of just having your yearly charitable donation this year, if you know you consistently do the same amount, let's say year after year, you could group two or three years at a time and then surpass that itemized deduction and actually get value again for your charitable contributions.
Okay, we talked here a little bit about the charitable deductions and just standard deductions as well. That'll be up on the 2018 tax return. Probably wouldn't be a bad idea to review your retirement account contributions as well, too, wouldn't it?
Well, and that's where it's going to be more valuable for folks, because, you know, just because they're increasing the standard deduction, and we've talked about this before, Chris, they're eliminating the exemptions. You know, so there's a little bit there where you gain, but then you lose a little, so you're a little forward. But if you itemized, you know, you actually could have a higher taxable income. So if you're not maximizing your retirement plans and you have enough discretionary income to look at capping those out, now would be the time to investigate it. You can have 18,500 of contributions in your qualified plans, and if you're over age 50, the catch-up allows you to get to 24,500. So maxing those out would directly reduce the taxable income you got to report for the year.
Now, I know many people through their employers have set up a health savings account. It's a good idea, a good way to be able to save money back from your paycheck to be able to go toward a way to help take care of some of your medical expenses. It's very important, I guess, to take advantage of this time before the end of the year to really, really hit it if you can and maximize what you can.
And again, the reason this stuff is even more pertinent today is because of the way the taxes are going to be filed, trying to simplify the process around these higher standard deductions. Taking advantage of things like the health savings account, if you're eligible to do so, you know, medical expenses for a lot of folks, especially folks working, you know, they don't get to deduct those. And if you can actually put it in an HSA, it comes, again, directly off of your income, comes off on the front sheet. So, again, reducing that taxable income where in the past it may have counted to some degree in the itemized deductions, now they're being eliminated using the HSA would, again, put them on, you know, the favorable side for you and reduce the tax obligation.
We're talking with Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer about some things you should take advantage of here, certainly before December 31st, that will make a big difference when it's time to do your returns for 2018, and you have those filed by April 15th. One of the other things, too, I think you talk about, and is, it goes along, I guess, in a way with the retirement account, is your IRA, and I guess the opportunity to maybe that you should take a look at whatever you happen to get distributed is whether it's going to be to your advantage. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so anybody nearing that dreaded age of 70 and a half where the IRS requires you to take a distribution, they just got to make sure that they understand what that amount is. The required minimum distribution starts. It's an amount you have to take out. And if you fail to do so, the penalty is quite large. It's 50%, Chris, of what you were supposed to take out.
Wow.
So it's pretty significant. And you do get what I call an oops year. If you forget to do it the first year, a lot of people say, hey, I got till April the following year. And the answer is yes, you do. But in doing so, then you have to take two the following year. So people need to understand that and how that would play into their overall tax obligation. Because it may not be in your best interest to say, hey, let me defer it and wait and go into the following year.
Are there any ways that people, if they are stuck with getting that distribution, to be able to roll that over into some other way to keep it in savings and avoid any more taxes?
Well, unfortunately, it has to be a distribution, but I think we have mentioned this in the past. One valuable tool that people can utilize that, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people are not aware of, if you are eligible for required minimum distributions, regardless of the amount of your required minimum distribution, you can directly send up to $100,000 per year from your qualified money directly to a charity.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say your required minimum distribution was $3,000. You could send anywhere from $1 to $100 of that IRA to your charitable contribution, and then you note that inside the tax return. And again, that's a way to counter what is now the higher standard deduction, because it will immediately reduce your taxable income on the front page and you actually get to count the charitable contribution.
I also know, too, that some people are lucky enough, they have enough as far as expenses for medical costs are concerned or health care in general, that they can be able to include those in their deductions. So I guess it's time to figure out exactly how much you can deduct.
Yeah, and one change this year for most people, it was a 10% elimination. For this year, it has dropped for everybody to 7.5%, which some people, depending on, you know, the year they were born, were still eligible for. But now everybody will be eligible for that 7.5% elimination versus the 10. And basically what that means is, you know, if you were close to 10% and got nothing in way of an itemized deduction for it the previous year, now a portion of that would be able to be included in potentially deducting on an itemized basis.
So it sounds like if you're careful and you keep track of these things and you get all these added up together, that you may actually be able to deduct something and make some benefit on your tax return next time.
Absolutely. And I think just the point of the conversation, Chris, like you and I have talked, it's understanding a little bit more about the tax laws. In the past, you know, itemized, you keep everything together. Now just keeping everything together and totaling up is probably not going to bring you the most value. You really need to look at it in the standpoint of how do I get these things to count on my tax return, and what are the other ways to get them to count as opposed to just looking at itemized deductions.
And also seems, too, as always, that if you got questions, if you have some problems, that it's time to get with your financial advisor and get those rounded out as soon as you can, before the end of the year.
Absolutely. You don't want to wait too long because, as you get near the end of the year, offices take time off just like everybody else. Administratively, they might have challenges processing, and the IRS doesn't care if the company couldn't process it on time, even if you requested it a week before the end of the year. So the next couple weeks would be critical.
Well, Greg, thank you very much for the advice, and we hope that if people have questions that they check with their financial advisor and get these things rounded out for sure. And we'll talk with you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome. We're talking with Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer.